The pseudo-clever stuff that Barris continually alluded to about his own vehicle probably bore some resemblance to reality, the reality of Arctur's own modified car, because many of the radio gimmicks which Arctur carried were SOP and had been demonstrated on late-night TV, on network talk shows, by electronic experts who had helped design them, or read about them in trade journals or seen them, or gotten fired from police labs and harbored a grudge. So the average citizen, or as Barris always said in his quasi-educated lofty way, the typical average citizen, knew by now that no black and white ran the risk of pulling over a fast-moving, souped-up, racing-striped 57 Chevy with what appeared to be a wild teenager spaced out behind the wheel on Coors beer, and then finding he'd halted an undercover narc vehicle in hot pursuit of its quarry. So the typical average citizen these days knew how and why all those narc vehicles as they roared along, scaring old ladies and straights into indignation and letter writing, continually signaled their identity back and forth to one another and their peers. What difference did it make? But what would make a difference, a dreadful one, would be if the punks, the hot rodders, the bikers, and especially the dealers and runners and pushers, managed to build and incorporate into their own similar cars such sophisticated devices. They could then whiz right on by, with impunity.
"Yeah, I'll walk then," Arctur said, which was what he had wanted to do anyhow. He had set up both Barris and Luckman. He had to walk.
"Where you going?" Luckman said.
"Donna's."
Getting to her place on foot was almost impossible. Saying this ensured neither man accompanying him. He put on his coat and set off toward the front door.
See you guys later.
"My car," Barris continued by way of more cop-out.
"If I tried to drive your car," Arctur said, "I'd press the wrong button, and it'd flood up over the greater LA downtown area like the Goodyear blimp, and they'd have me dumping borate on oil well fires."
"I'm glad you can appreciate my position," Barris was muttering as Arctur shut the door.
Seated before the hologram cube of Monitor 2, Fred in his scramble suit watched impassively as the hologram changed continually before his eyes. In the safe apartment, other watchers watched other holograms from other source points, mostly playbacks. Fred, however, watched a live hologram unfolding. It recorded, but he had bypassed the stored tape to pick up the transmission at the instant it emanated from Bob Arctor's allegedly run-down house. Within the hologram, in broadband color, with high resolution, sat Barris and Luckman. In the best chair in the living room, Barris sat bent over a hash pipe which he'd been putting together for days. His face had become a mask of concentration as he wound white string around and around the bowl of the pipe. At the coffee table, Luckman hunched over a Swanson's chicken TV dinner, eating in big, clumsy mouthfuls while he watched a Western on TV. Four beer cans, empties, lay squashed by his mighty fist on the table. Now he reached for a fifth half-full can, knocked it over, spilled it, grabbed it, and cursed. At the curse, Barris peered up, regarding him like Mime and Siegfried, then resumed work. Fred continued to watch.
"Fucking late-night TV," Luckman gargled, his mouth full of food.
And then suddenly he dropped his spoon and leaped staggering to his feet. Tottered, spun toward Barris, both hands raised, gesturing, saying nothing, his mouth open and half-chewed food spilling from it onto his clothes, onto the floor. The cats ran forward eagerly.